welcome back to the Content Warfare Podcast, where every week we interview the internet's most prolific content creators and extract their secrets for winning the battle for attention online. Today, we have a very special guest. I am honored to bring you Brian Clark, founder and CEO of Copyblogger Media. This is a classic Content Warfare Podcast episode where we start down one path and end up traveling 15 others. You're going to take so much away from this. All you marketers out there, I know you're going to love this episode, but especially small business owners, solopreneurs, those who are just trying to get their fingers into this market or trying to stand out and get their message heard and use content marketing to do this. We don't talk necessarily tactics, but there is so much valuable the principles. These are the principles, the foundational concepts behind being a success in the digital world. Listen closely, listen twice, listen three times, tell all your friends. Here we go. Brian Clark, Content Warfare Podcast, starting right now. Today, I am joined by Brian Clark, the founder and CEO of Copyblogger Media, the host of Unemployable, and an evangelist for the Rainmaker platform. At least that's what it's telling me in your little author bio on Copyblogger. So I'm a super lazy podcast host, Brian. I hope that you'll give me just a little bit of leeway on that. So I just pulled up your author bio and read it.
That's impressive. I just changed it. So you got the freshest description I've got, at least in that short a version.
So just so everyone's listening, I got the exclusive short version bio for the Brian Clark. So any news wires that are listening, you can push that out. Ryan Hanley gets the exclusive on that. Well, Brian, I appreciate you coming in. Obviously, you've been someone I want to talk to for a while. We've had a chance to interact a couple times in person at Social Media Marketing World 2014 and 2015. And I'm a Kool-Aid drinker. I'm one of the disciples who grew up reading Copyblogger and using the tools, and now actually the Rainmaker platform, which we're going to talk a little bit about. I use at my employer, at the company that I work for. We're building a platform for agencies, for independent insurance agencies, using the Rainmaker platform. So I appreciate all that stuff. I'm actually not going to ask you to do any more of your background. I kind of want to get right into it, if that's cool with you.
Yeah, that's cool.
I'm assuming that everyone who's listening to this knows how to Google if they don't know who you are. So we're not going to do the, this is how I got to where I am. What I want to talk about today mostly is the idea of membership. And not necessarily the technical aspects of how you build a membership community, but more the high-level stuff. Like, just maybe start with, what does membership mean to you as a creator? Just that term, the idea of it, what does it mean to you?
Yeah, it's interesting because over 20 years of the commercial web, we see how people aggregate together from all over the world, and it's usually based on some sort of affinity, some sort of topical interest. As opposed to something like Facebook, where the idea was that those are your, true friends, your friends from high school, whatever the case may be. And, the talk about tribes and finding your tribe or your group and all that is still kind of the fundamental thing that people need to understand when they're trying to build an audience of people that may end up doing business with them, is that you have to speak to people who are really going to engage with you, the authentic you, who you really are, and not worry about the people who don't. And that's a very difficult concept, I think, for everyone, especially business people. So membership is really just the next level, I think, the belonging. Here is where I belong. These are the people I belong with. And it's a very, very powerful thing. And it's what we seek out, both just in terms of entertainment, engagement, but also who we like to do business with. The whole know, like, and trust. I think the web allows us to take that to the next level.
So you used the word, a version of authenticity. You said authentic. I get a lot of emails about that concept because I've written about it before. I talk about it on the show quite a bit, and how you cultivate that. And I don't mean cultivate it from like the sleazy sense, but just, how do you come to grips with who your authentic you actually is? Like, maybe that's a little psychologist level, but you know, what do you think on that?
No, it is a complicated thing, and it's one of the most misunderstood words, I think, that gets knocked around way too much online. And I use it with a caveat, so I guess thanks for the opportunity to give that, because you know, you have so many people being themselves and oversharing and really not coming across in the correct way, and then they're unhappy with their results. So Seth Godin, I think, said it best when he said, authenticity or an authentic story is a story that your audience, your prospects, the people you want to attract, it's a story they want to hear. Or maybe another way of putting it is, be the best you. So you're still being absolutely who you are, and yet you have to make decisions about what kind of professional, what aspect of myself is best. And it doesn't have to be completely buttoned up, you know. Some people curse profusely, and that's cool because that's who they want to be and who they want to project to. I tend to not do that online, as I might do in real life. So that's a decision. But, you know, the person I am online is me. But then again, we all play different roles in different contexts. And I think that's the important thing. Who is the person that you're going to be in the context of online marketing and business?
When I first got into content marketing as a from the marketing side, I have, you know, obviously done it a long time inside a business for an insurance agency. But when I expanded out and started talking to other marketers, my shtick was like no bullshit kind of thing, right? Which just saying it today like makes me cringe a little bit. But that was kind of my shtick. And I did that for maybe like a year and a half. And then I just asked a simple question actually on Google Plus. I just said, does the word no bullshit make you feel like I'm not professional? 275 comments later and walking through this thought process, I actually decided to remove that language from my entire site. Not because of peer pressure, but because what you just actually said, which I think is perfect, in the context of what I wanted to be in that space, I didn't want to be known as, you know, the bullshit guy, right? That could be what it was, but you didn't have to necessarily use that language. So I guess my question that I'm thinking about while I'm rambling here is, can this be manufactured? Like, can it? When you say be your best version of yourself, I think some people will hear, well, am I not really being true to who I am or whatever? And I'm doing air quotes even though you can't see me. So can you manufacture this thing, or does it have to be some piece of you?
Well, I guess you could manufacture it. I mean, what's the old saying? As soon as you learn how to fake sincerity, you've got it made. But that's not what I mean. I mean that we play different roles, different aspects of ourselves, depending on context. The way I act around my mom is not how I act around customers, and it's not the way I act around buddies, going out to have a drink, right? So it makes sense. We all know that we act differently in different contexts. So it just really becomes, here's the thing, because there are people who make your no bullshit thing seem tame.
Yes.
You know, like Erica, red-haired, right? She is so comfortable with that, and people pick up on that. That is her, and she is perfectly comfortable being confrontational and somewhat abrasive, and she's also hilarious, right? The key to it is, I think the argument against faking is, unless you're a sociopath, you're probably not going to be comfortable with a manufactured version of yourself. So again, pick the side of you that you want to project in that context. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense to me. I mean, basically what you're saying, I think the example that you gave about, so the work side of you is not the same as you on the golf course, right? It's not the same thing. And I think that makes sense. So, why do people, okay, so we're talking about authenticity and how important it is to, maybe building the connection with this audience of true fans or whatever you want to call them that may ultimately become part of your membership. How do you determine if you're oversharing? What is the line, right? Because I've had people ask me this as well, like, should I be taking pictures of every 15 minutes of my day. And obviously that's the way far example. But how do you know? How do you look back and say, I'm being a little too authentic?
Again, I think it comes down to what you're comfortable with, but also just always keeping in mind what your audience is looking to get from you. So I am much more reserved on sharing my personal life than, say, Chris Brogan, who Jason Falls made on Facebook the other day, made a joke about Chris's workout routine, which was like, you know, this many squats, this many bench press, and 52 selfies, you know.
that's hilarious.
People love, you know, that's how Chris interacts with people. And he loves attention way more than I do. I like my work to get attention. I really, that's my mindset. And I think that's correct, but that doesn't mean that my approach to it is the only way. For example, I have a very dry, kind of even irreverent sense of humor, and it doesn't translate well a lot of times online. And I figured that out, so I kind of dial that back because you're missing cues in order to get my humor. And primarily, that's not why people follow me, you know, for me to crack bad jokes. But you do have to interject who you are, what you stand for as a person, because people are interested in that and it matters. So there's this fine line between how much of myself do I let come across so that people know enough about me to even know, like, and trust me. You know, it can't just be the information you give. It's the way you deliver whatever value you're providing. And that's you. No one can copy you.
So I've got this dialed in. I have a good feeling for authenticity, and though it may be a constant effort of getting better, I'm starting to get a feel for, I guess, part of what we're talking about is our voice, right? That mythical voice that we're all trying to find somewhere.
Yeah, in terms of writing terminology, it would be voice. You know, now in the world of podcasting and video and Periscope, it's your literal voice. And that's a great thing, I think, for people who aren't comfortable with writing, because even the best writers, it takes a long time to develop your distinctive voice. And even then, it's missing the warmth and the inflection and the, you know, there's just nothing like something like this podcast. We're actually in people's heads right now.
Yeah.
That's an amazing thing. And I think people really are able to get a better feel for you that way. Through mediums such as audio and video, with audio, I think, being coming out ahead because you don't have to look at a screen. It's completely portable. People can listen whenever and wherever they want to. And I think that's why podcasting is really taken off.
And people are listening to you in a place usually that they enjoy, right? Like a lot of times when I'm listening to a podcast, it's I'm working out or I'm taking the dog for a walk or I'm doing something that I enjoy. And, you know, subconsciously there's some translation to I'm going to do this thing that I really enjoyed that I used to have no audio with. And now I'm going to bring this person with me. And I think it really builds an intimate connection that you just can't get in any other aspect other than if I was going on the walk. But I know we're supposed to do things that don't scale, but that would be a tough one to reach people if I was doing individual walks with all of them.
That is true. You'd be in really great shape, though.
And I'd probably get a lot more purchases of my products. So we're starting to dial into this. We found that our literal voice or our figurative voice. And we're starting to build an audience. People are starting to come and appreciate our work. What is the step from, because to me, the I'm going to become a member of your community or tribe or whatever is the word that you used was belong. But when the first time that we interact with a creator, we don't necessarily feel that. Oftentimes we don't feel that until we've interacted multiple times. So what are some of the things that we could think about in taking an audience from appreciation of our work to that sense of belief in why we're doing it and wanting to be a bigger part of it?
Well, I think the key of becoming a leader of a group or a tribe or, you know, literally translated to a membership site or whatever the case may be, at least in my experience and opinion, you've got to be a member of that tribe first. And that you have to belong to the group that you hope to inspire and lead, right? And that's an amazing advantage. Again, going back to, can you manufacture authenticity, or can you serve a group that you're not a member of? I think you can do a lot of research, and you can enter a new market or whatever the case may be in that sense. But yeah, you've got your work cut out for you, but it's certainly doable. I mean, professional copywriters are often coming to a new company and a new product, and they have to learn everything about the product, the company, and the people they serve. And that can be incredibly fun. But for me, I've always kind of stuck with something I already belong to, and then figure out a way to add value by addressing people's problems and desires. So, for example, when we've developed software over the years, often I'm the best use case we have as far as, this frustrates me. I'm not a coder. I just want to create content. This technology is getting in my way. Let's fix this. And if we can fix that for me, then that means, to a certain degree, I think we've got a really good shot at having a viable product or service, because I am my target market.
Yeah, and it also allows you, and I agree with that completely. I see this all the time in the industry. My primary vertical is insurance, as everyone listening to this most likely knows. I do a lot of speaking in that circuit, and I see and very well-meaning speakers from different walks of life come in and speak alongside me, and I watch them, and they do something that I would caution everybody against when you're addressing an audience that you are not part of. Don't tell them how they should run their business or their life, right? Like, it is almost an immediate disconnection with the audience, and you can tell that they are not, quote unquote, like one of us when they try to interject what they think outside into that community. And the only way that that message would really connect is by immersing themselves in it, spending some time with that target market. You know, in this case, it would be insurance, but, you know, that target market, spending some time in there, and then they could talk as one of us. But yeah, it is really, really obvious when they don't.
Let me ask you this. Because I've been, doing this for a long time, and even Copyblogger now is almost 10 years old, and watching the new marketing, quote unquote, emerge, centered around content and value as opposed to just hard sales, pitches, advertising, that kind of thing. All valid, and I lived it. Every business I've started has been according to those principles. But don't you think there are a lot of people in that were preaching, evangelizing the way marketing should be done, came across exactly like that? Like, you're doing it wrong, you're an idiot. You know, I mean, it was really sometimes brutal to see.
Yeah.
And they obviously attracted fans. You know, they were preaching to the choir in many cases. And on the other hand, yet they didn't realize why they were turning people off. And I think that's the same thing.
Yeah.
That you have to have some empathy for the way things have been done before you can try to get someone to consider a new approach, besides saying it works.
Yeah, know? I think this is a common mistake as you're growing into whatever you're ultimately going to become when you grow up is, you know, and I know this from my own thing. When I first started trying to sell content marketing to insurance agents, I mean, this is the smartest group of people that still believe it's 1967. Like, they barely use fax machines. And here I'm talking about, I mean, well, you and I would feel that they were relatively basic, but this is incredibly complex stuff. Like, which key do I strike on the keyboard to get from the headline section to the body section of the Word document? You know, it's questions like that. So when I'm telling them that someone who's making $300,000 a year, that they need to change their business, that's a tough sale. So, from my own experience, I almost took a year off from public speaking in that space, and went into other industries to learn, like the Dump Truck Association and the all these crazy things, to learn what you just said is, how do you have empathy on the stage for the people that you're talking to? And the only way to do that is immerse yourself into what you're doing. I took almost like, and Damien talks about this in some of his personal blog posts about putting yourself into the market that you're talking about. You have to do that. You absolutely have to do that, or otherwise they will be able to smell, like, it's almost, they can just sense it, that you're not one of us, and then it just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So it can be challenging, but I think it takes an amount of humility, I think, on the part of the quote unquote expert to realize that you are speaking to an audience of experts, and just because they may be doing things in a way that you no longer think is effective in the long term, which I think is accurate. I think you can make that argument to someone making $300,000 a year selling insurance by saying, look, you've got a great business now. Let's future-proof it by starting now. Before things stop working, let's implement some new strategies that by the time you've got it going – it's going to take over. You're going to make more money, and your business is going to be protected. Now, that someone might listen to.
Yeah, and I think the other big piece is understanding it's going to take time. The first time, I mean, you have an hour in front of somebody, or a 3-minute video, or a 35-minute podcast. You're not going to change anyone's world. Like, no one's going to break every habit that they've built over their lifetime and start doing the things that you're recommending they do from one interaction. It's going to be many. And many times, it's about taking and mixing the different interactions as much as you can. So video to podcasting to a blog post to an email to a presentation. And then if you can get them to change one habit, I think that's a home run for people who are in this field. Just change one habit. And then once they change one, you can... Am I being interviewed, or am I interviewing you now? I'm like off on a complete tangent.
No, but think about it, because we're basically advocating that they get in the media business, and that is head spinning to a lot of traditional marketers. But once they understand that we're all in the media business now, and some of us are just doing it better than others from a business standpoint, then you know you've got to get them to accept a mindset change. And then they'll go, okay, so what's the first step? And but before that, you know, I think it's difficult. It really is.
So I actually had an agent. I was just in Alabama last week, actually talking to Alabama insurance agents, but in Pensacola, Florida, if that makes any sense. And there was an agent in the audience. It was actually the third time that he had seen me at an event. And at the end of the event, he came up to me and said, I've been working on starting a local community podcast for about 3 months. This was perfect timing. Can we do a phone call and can you walk me through it? And I was happy to do that. And he said that he had thought about it the first time. He'd read some stuff, seen me the second time talking about it, you know, kind of started to make some moves. And now here's a third time. And that was over the course of 2.5 years. So, you know, I always like to just explain to people, or at least give them the recommendation that, it does. This stuff takes a lot of time. I mean, you just said Copyblogger's been around for 10 years. Part of that seems crazy to me because of how long I've been following you. But at the same time, think of where you are today. I mean, that 10 years, I mean, there's a lot of work in there, right?
Yeah, it's been every year. And the funny thing is, if you would have told me when I started it that, you know, 10 years I'd still be, you know, doing this thing, I would have laughed. This is actually the longest business I've ever run because I, you know, like a lot of entrepreneurs, I'm always looking for the next thing. But the cool thing with us was the blog launched in 2006 and our first product launched in 2007. And every year we created and launched a new line of business. And then 2010, we merged all those startup companies I launched off of Copyblogger together so that we could build the Rainmaker platform. So it's always been different, but it's fascinating to watch how this whole industry, like when I started Copyblogger and I said the two words blog and sell in the same sentence, people lost their minds because it was very kumbaya back then.
Yeah.
Now content marketing is a $44 billion industry. I mean, that's just 10 years, you know? So it's been a roller coaster ride, but it's never gotten dull or monotonous because we keep almost reinventing ourselves every year to some degree.
So speaking of new things, Unemployable, it was, what was the name before Unemployable?
It wasn't. That's the name of...
You were working on another project too where you were looking into, you were basically doing curation project. What was the name of that?
Oh yeah, that's a separate thing.
That's a separate thing. Okay. Yeah. I thought, for some reason, I thought you had merged that into this as well.
Further is basically a personal development email newsletter. And it's just, you know, basically me, I read a ton and I share what I've learned that week and send it out to an audience. It's almost like my version of a personal blog, although hopefully it's not as indulgent as most personal blogs are. You know, I'm always still thinking audience focused, even with that project, but no, that's separate. They are kind of related. Let me tell you the story about this. So I worked with a speaking coach, not really on presentation, but on developing authentic stories. There's that word again. So one exercise that I had to do was sum up my life philosophy in one word. And when we started that process, the first word that popped in my head was unemployable, and everyone laughed, you know, because it's funny, but it's not really a joke. You know, I mean, I haven't had a job in 17 years, and I just can't imagine ever having one. You know, I'm just too into my own creative freedom and otherwise. But as I continued to seriously work on the process, the word I came up with was further, as in, you know, keep pushing everything further in every aspect of your life, business, whatever the case may be, sports, family, what have you. So further became the name of that email newsletter, which I just love to do. I do it on the weekends for fun, really. And then Unemployable became my next podcast project. And it's going to be a little bit larger than that, but that's effectively what it is right now. And it's basically trying to help everyone from freelancers to one-person startups to take it to the next level. Because when I first started, that was me. I did, my second episode was called From Solo to CEO. And it's really just talking about the 9 businesses I've started, 8 that succeeded, and how each step up was a little bit bigger and a little bit more rewarding, not just monetarily, but also in just quality of life as I got better at delegating, following processes as opposed to falling into chaos like I did in the early days.
So because this idea of Unemployable is, I have a job and I feel unemployable. I don't know how my boss puts up with me, but
well, that's all the people, you know, we have 55 people working for us and people are like, aren't you worried they're going to listen to you and quit? And I'm like, well, if I haven't created an environment that we all unemployable types can actually thrive in, you know, we're a virtual company. No one has to show up at an office. No one's really managed, if you want to think about it from a traditional standpoint. You just have to be very careful about who you hire and then let them go get their work done. And as long as that's happening, you know, it's fine. So I think I'm not too worried. And if anyone ends up going out on their own, I will give my blessing and I'll give my help if I can, you know. So
how do you know, or what are some triggers or things that people should be thinking about? Because the idea, as much as I feel like I'm have the entrepreneurial mindset, I have this like kind of the idea of further, like immediately connected. I get the emails, and for some reason that's why I thought they merged, because it was similar concepts, but I apologize for that. If you're in the company, and let's say I feel like I'm in a unique position like your employees. Like, my boss basically brought me in knowing that what he was getting, right? Like, you cram me in a box and I'm going to explode. But there's a lot of people who don't have that, right? Their bosses, you know, need the checklist and the quarterly review and all the things that kind of go along with, I don't know, cramping your style. And it almost feels like if you don't catch it early in your life, like the solopreneur entrepreneur dream, it just gets heavier and heavier, right? Like when you're 23, doing a startup is exciting. When you're 43, doing a startup is like scary as hell. And so how do you, not that everyone should go off on their own, but what are some things that people can think about, or maybe just advice that you can give them when they're considering this, as I know today so many people are?
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because you know, we hear so much about the very young person with nothing to lose doing the startup thing. But if you look at the actual data about entrepreneurs, most of them are around the age of 40. I did not go out on my own until I was 30, and that was after practicing law for a few years, unhappily. So I think that perception that if you don't start when you're just a kid is incorrect. And I think really, and that's part of what I talk about on the Unemployable podcast, which is, you know, shifts in mindset, shifts in sophistication, and all of that happens through the accumulation of experience and wisdom. So it makes sense that when you're about age 40 is when you actually probably have it all together from various standpoints to succeed, as long as you're able to do it with the support of your spouse, you know, your family, children, situation. There's a lot of variables there, but I don't necessarily think it's a young person's game. I think we hear a lot of stories, great stories, about young people with great new ideas that knock it out of the park. But I think actually the truth is most people are a little more seasoned.
So I think that the people who tend to succeed and be able to sustain it seem to be people who've had that experience, right? And for some reason, that makes it not as sexy. But I have more than a dozen friends who were scared when they did it, but did it in their, you know, even later 20s. But it's almost like the family is what gives you the fear. It's not the age so much. It's can I replace this income? And they've done it and been very successful. Because I think it's like you said, they can leverage that experience that they had. So if I'm considering this, I'm thinking about I want to make this jump. You know, when you did this, how did you leverage some of your previous experience? Because let's say I'm 35 and I'm sitting here and I'm going, geez, I've always wanted to go out on my own and do an X, but I'm so nervous about it. How do you leverage some of the skills that you've built up to make that maneuver? And is it just a stop and go on the other thing, or is there a transitional period? How does that work?
So what I tell people to do is not what I did. So hopefully I'm not coming off as a hypocrite. It's a cautionary thing. But I would, you know, after practicing law for 4 years, I was so miserable. And I thought it was just the practice of law. But again, it turned out that I just don't like working for anyone else. That was a big part of it. But at the point that I quit that job, which was a great, you know, big law firm, nice salary, everything kind of thing, I was just burnt out. And I said, you know, if I end up a bartender in Austin because I can't figure this out, then I guess that's what's going to happen. I don't recommend that. But, you know, when you have that kind of what's the worst that could happen thing, it kind of helps. You know, you're not, you know, it's not going to kill you, hopefully. but I would, and I had never taken a business class. I'd never read a marketing book. I was truly a blank slate. But when you're going online in the early days before there were all these conferences and courses and all these resources, it was actually good not to have anything to unlearn. And I think that there was a lot of struggle for a lot of traditional business people and marketers to adapt to some of the unique ways that the internet worked. But these days, there's so much education. Go to the conferences like the guy you talk to until you figure it out. It happens. You get that light bulb moment where your mind shifts. Then you know what to work on, which you can do as a side project while keeping the day job, you know. And that can be tough, especially when you have the demands of family. But it's a lot safer than just leaping when you have a family or a spouse to consider.
Yeah, that is definitely it's always been a side hustle for me, and I kind of enjoy that about what I do is I like so I I have to be completely honest, and people are probably well aware of this. I know that to a certain extent, ego drives some of the decisions that I make. I am self-aware enough to understand that, and I really like playing at the big game, which I'm doing now in my current position. But there's something about drilling all the way down and kind of helping people one to one. So I do that on a side hustle, and I think for those listening, it's okay to have kind of multiple focuses. I mean, you have copy blogger, and now you've taken on two additional projects further, which you do on your free time in the weekends, and unemployable. And I think it's okay to have multiple focuses, right? Like, a lot of times people say, well, I've been doing this, like you were doing law. How can I, will people still respect me and trust me if I make this hard pivot into something else?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a valid concern. But the beauty of the internet is that, again, you could be reaching a group of people based on some topical interest that you have that has nothing to do with your day job, to the point where people may not even know you're doing it. So to a certain degree, it's a big old internet out there, and I wouldn't sweat that too much. Also, compared to, 15, 20 years ago, podcasting, blogging, whatever the case may be, much more or much less weird. When I started publishing online after leaving my law job, my parents were despondent. My friends thought I was insane. That's a lot to deal with. And luckily, I have the personality type that I'm not going to say it didn't bother me. I'm just going to say I didn't let it stop me. I have that kind of annoying character trait about me.
Self-determination.
I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care.
So since we've just gone completely off the rails, as most of the time that's what these episodes do, I want to pull all the way back to a word that you used actually just one time, but I think it's critical. And while you're on, I would be a bad podcast host if I didn't ask you about this. You used the word story, and tying it into building a membership, creating that sense of belonging. How important is your story and not just what you do to creating that deeper belief feeling?
Yeah, I mean, again, story in the sense of business, and especially online with content marketing, again, it's been like reduced to a buzzword, except story is the most fundamental thing about us as human beings. It's not like it's a new thing. I just think people are starting to understand that there's always a story being told, especially in the minds of your audience or your prospects, the people you want to do business with. And you don't necessarily control it, but if you don't shape it, that narrative in the way that you want it to be, kind of like with voice, the story goes on in their heads. You just may not like the story that they're telling themselves about you. So it's all a big story. It's not necessarily just once upon a time literal storytelling type things, although, of course, from a copywriting standpoint, that's one of the most effective ways to get people engaged, because we just respond to story. So I think it's a confusing thing for people because it can be taken very literally. But again, so with the Unemployable podcast, I'm telling the story of my entrepreneurial career. It's not fiction. I tell the bad stuff as much as the good stuff because I learned so much from screwing up and being clueless. So, but that's the story of that segment of my life that's relevant to a certain type of person that would not be relevant at all to a person who feels more comfortable within a corporate environment, correct? So it's not a story for everyone, but it's a story nonetheless.
People probably actually resonate more or find more value in the things that maybe or the mistakes that you've made or the things that haven't gone completely to plan than the actual successes. Am I right in that?
That is true. And even from a learning psychology standpoint, it's been proven that people retain and can act on information based on what not to do almost more, actually more, than being told what to do. And that's an interesting thing, right? But so you, it's almost essential that to be a real person, you can't try to come across like you're infallible, because I don't care who you are, that's a lie. So that's part of being an authentic person. There's a great example there. Just don't worry about trying to appear perfect, because no one believes anyone is perfect, and no one's going to relate to you even if you were. So I think there's a lot that can be done with sharing, you know, the story of, wow, let me tell you how I just royally screwed it and how you can avoid that. It's very important.
Yeah. I actually, through trial and error, I start many of my insurance industry presentations with the simple line, I was a terrible insurance agent, period. And then I just like pause, and literally I watch every eye go bing, 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 like across. I can literally just watch them like gophers in a prairie. They're all of a sudden, they're all their heads pop up, right? Like the last thing that they were expecting to hear.
That was the last thing that they expected to hear. You got their attention, because they're like, why are we listening to this guy? I'm listening though.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not probably going to do anything that he says now, but I'm listening to what he's saying. We've gone a lot of different ways with this, and the last thing I would just like you to talk just a little bit about, only because you know, this is free consulting for me, is the Rainmaker platform and kind of the culmination of that idea. And you don't have to get down in the nuts and bolts of it, but just I have found it to be an incredible tool, and I'm definitely a believer in it. And I give anyone who's listening, even though I promise I'm not being paid for this, a huge recommendation. You know, if it makes sense for you, it's definitely a viable platform. But I'm more interested in 2010. You brought all these tools together. Was that always the idea, was to formulate this thing, or you had bought, you know, kind of created the pieces, not bought, but created the pieces over time, brought them together, and then I'd just like you to talk a little bit about the rollout, because I thought the rollout was one freaking genius, and I listened to all the damn podcasts, and I was sold probably like two episodes in, and then you did five more, and just talk a little bit about that, because I, from a content marketing perspective, it was executed, at least from the outside looking in, as well as I've seen a product rolled out like that, especially that kind of scale, and then it delivered. So I'm just interested.
Yeah, okay. Let me make sure I cover.
There was like 17 questions in there. So if you hit two or three of them, I'll be happy. That's all.
So in 2010, we had some of the parts, but I had all these separate companies that the only thing in common was me, and these smart partners that I had no incentive to talk to one another. So we merged all the companies together with the idea that we wanted to build a complete solution that we would use ourselves, because we just were not satisfied with anything of that kind at that time, or really even now. And once we got all together, that's when we got the hosting piece created. And then we built our own membership and landing page technology. So it was a long process for a bootstrap company. We didn't go and take venture capital or raise money in order to get this done. But so what we effectively did as a bootstrap company was sell all the parts individually while we worked out. The hardest part about building Rainmaker was not the parts, it was the glue essentially creating a SaaS product that could be updated, you know, by us, taking the maintenance out of it, that was secure, that was fast, that had all the components and all that. So as far as the rollout, it was interesting, especially for a company that had been known for text content, to do the future of the company in the hands of a podcast. And my thinking behind that was really, we wanted to start a new podcast, but I had a very deliberate, like you said, those first eight episodes were designed to be repurposed into what is now a free course that we use to introduce people to the concepts they need to know, and then, of course, eventually the platform. And so then I added three webinars to the end of that initial eight episode series. And that was really when we tried to get people on board for the pilot program. It wasn't quite a beta. This was in April 2014, but more like a minimum viable product kind of thing. Like we built the platform, and then we wanted feedback from real people, and that's why they got the best deal in exchange for telling us what they thought. So from April of 2014 to September, when the public launch happened, we went from a 1.0 to a 2.0, which is amazing. My dev team, I am just still so proud of them for that. And then we've continued to iterate it really rapidly until we launched the pro version in March of this year. But I'm telling you that we've got a lot more that we plan to do with that thing to make it a true marketing automation all-in-one solution, as opposed to just a way to take the dev out of website development, right? It's going to be the website, but also all the other tools in one solution, as opposed to having to kind of duct tape different solutions together.
Yeah, well, I for one am very excited about that. I'm a Kool-Aid drinker, as I said at the beginning. It has worked. It has answered all our concerns. And actually, in a few months, we'll be launching our first course out of it. So I'm excited for that, too.
Excellent. I love to hear that.
Very last question. Do you ever get voice envy when you're on a podcast with Robert Bruce?
All the time. And I swear, we just talked about this yesterday, because I've been doing a lot of podcast interviews lately, and occasionally someone will give me a compliment on my voice. And of course, I say thank you, but in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm no Robert Bruce, right? I mean, I have the most voice envy with Robert, because whether I have a good voice or not, he has the golden voice. And he is a professionally trained actor, so he's just got mad skills plus that voice. It's almost not fair.
It is almost not fair, and I can tell you, as someone who listens to the damn podcast, like, you'll say something and you can't not like believe what he's saying. Like, he could literally tell you anything. He'd be like, chickens are falling from the sky, and you'd be like, it's possible, like, I gotta go look out the window.
It's funny, because Robert doesn't give himself enough credit. He knows what he's talking about, but he's always, oh, I don't know what I'm saying, and doesn't. I'm like, Robert, yes, you do. Number two, it doesn't matter. People just like listening to you.
Well, hey, Brian, this has been phenomenal. Really enjoyed it. Tons of great stuff. And as usual, I set us on a course, and then we got swept off, which is exactly what
I was
hoping.
No, this was fun. I love this. This was truly, you know, making it up as we went along, but that's good. You know, it was an authentic conversation, Ryan.
Yes. So that's super meta. That is about as meta as you can get. Well, for everyone listening at home, thank you for coming, all you content warriors. Obviously, I just recommended like the whole platform of things that Brian does, but mostly go over and check out the Unemployable podcast, a website. You'll get a feel for what Rainmaker is. And if you have any questions and you don't want to talk to Brian, you can direct them at me as far as my experience. I love it. Otherwise, go over and check out Brian's stuff. Brian, it has been my pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me. This was fun.